Hello there. Welcome to the Metaphysical Hour with Dolores Cannon. This is my first time to go live. I've done 5 other shows, and they have all been taped because I was traveling and doing conferences, and I just got back from halfway around the world. So I did the taped ones so that they would have them to play while getting started on these things. But tonight's the first live one, so I'm not sure what's going to happen here. And Don, who runs all of this, has told me that there could be call-ins if you want to. Some of the other ones, the people, you probably listen to the other shows that I've taped, and maybe you have some questions or something you want to ask me about my work. Because I know many of you out there have read my books and are familiar with my work, because I lecture all over the world, and a lot of people are familiar with my books. All right. But also, I want to give out some numbers here if anyone does want to call in and talk to me and ask questions. The number for the United States is a free number, is 1-888-268-4313. That's 888-268-4313. If you want to call in and ask questions anytime during the next hour. And for those of you who are listening overseas in other countries and international, we also have a number that you can call in. That number is 281-419-7697. 281-419-7697. That's for international listeners. All right. I said whenever I got back, I was going to tell you a little bit about my trip because it's the first time I have ever gone to the Middle East. This means now that I've been on every continent in the world. Africa was the last continent that I hadn't been on. And I never thought I was going to go to the Middle East first, because I've been asked to go to Johannesburg and different parts further down in Africa. But this was a very interesting trip. I wasn't even supposed to go there, really. I think I've mentioned on the other shows, the reason I went was because I was supposed to be doing an international conference in Istanbul. And they had asked me to come to Dubai. I had no idea where in the world Dubai was. I didn't even know what it was. I'd never heard of that country before. So I went on the internet and found out, here's Saudi Arabia, Iran, and Iraq. Dubai is right in the middle of all of that, right on the Persian Gulf. It's called the United Arab Emirates, and it is separate from the other parts of the Middle East and the other Arab countries over there. And I was real worried about going, and I talked to the woman who wanted me to come over, and she said there are many expatriates there. Expatriates are people that, they're mostly what they call Westerners, the people from Europe, and a lot of English. And I think it used to be an English colony long, long time ago, so they call them expatriates are there. And she said they are starving for information, so they said, please, can you come and do some lectures and talk about your work? Because they don't have very much metaphysical information over there. Even when we arranged to have my books brought in, there was only certain types of books that were allowed into the country, and they had to go through a censor board to be allowed in and be sold there. And so I was a little worried about it. I didn't know what was going to happen. But they assured me that the United Arab Emirates in the countries of Dubai is neutral. They're neutral. Everything is going on around them over there. And they said in some of the countries in the Middle East don't like that because they won't take sides. But they say, don't worry about it. They said, you'll be perfectly safe, and it'll be an exciting adventure. So I thought, well, as long as I'm going to Istanbul for the international conference, I'll tack it on because it's not very far away. So we went ahead and made arrangements. And I even made arrangements to teach one of my classes while I was over there. So everything was going along smoothly until about a month or so ago when Istanbul, they emailed me and said they were canceling their conference. And that's that far into the game. And I said, wait a minute, what's going on here? And part of it was because the keynote speaker had gotten ill. I wasn't going to mention his name, but a lot of you probably know him. Zachariah Sitchin was one of the main speaker they were going to have. And they said because of his health, he couldn't come. And then some of the other speakers couldn't work it into their schedules. So they decided to cancel the whole conference, and they're going to try to reschedule next year. And he wanted me to come next year, but I said, I don't know if I can work it into my schedule next year. We'll just have to see. But I said, there I am, not going to Istanbul, but I already had the plans to go to Dubai. So I didn't have any choice but to go ahead and make that trip separately. So I think it was meant to be, because there were very interesting things that happened over there that wouldn't have happened if I had they had said, just come here. It's a long trip, and I'm getting to where I don't like to do those long trips, like the ones to Australia when you're on the plane for 12, 14 hours after you leave California. I'm getting to where I don't like to do those real long trips anymore, and I think that would have discouraged me if I thought I'm just going over there. But it was meant to be, and I always say they, and if you listen to my other shows, you know who I mean by they, the ones who run this and the ones who get me to where I'm supposed to go, the ones that take care of me, the ones on the other side, I guess you would say. They're always arranging things, and I kind of go along for the ride. I never know what they have planned for me next. But I think it was very important that I went to that part of the world. But if I was just going to go there, I wouldn't have done it to begin with. But I had to fly to London, which I was just there in May. You know, I spent the whole month of May in Europe. I was in Moscow and Ukraine and Holland and Norway. I go to many, many countries. So I fly 7 hours from Chicago to London, and I stay overnight. I like to break these long trips up. Then it was 7 more hours into Dubai, so it's a long trip, and not knowing what to expect. But if you've ever been on these flights that go overseas and they go for long distances, they have the little maps that are shown. You can follow your progress by turning them on. And little airplane, it shows right where you are at any given time, over what continent, what cities, and how much longer it is till you get to your destination. And so when I was watching that, I saw, even though it was late at night, we were coming in, I saw we were flying right over Iraq. We were flying right over Baghdad in Iraq, and it was a strange feeling that here we are, right over where the war is going on. And if you look out the windows, it's night. All we could see were the lights of cities. But you could see some fires, but we thought they were probably the tops of the oil wells. But it was just a strange feeling that here we are flying right over the war zone. Believe me, that's as close as I ever want to get to the war. Then after flying out of Iraq, we had to fly over the Persian Gulf, and the Dubai is right on the other side of the Persian Gulf. So we got in there about 1 o'clock in the morning. But in one of my books, I did mention that they told me one time, and you know, I said, I don't get my information with channeling. It comes through the people that I work with, all the people that I'm hypnotized and I do therapy with. They find a way to get messages through to me when I'm working with these people. And often it will be toward the end of the session, after I finish the therapy and working with the person and taking them through the past life that's most appropriate, often at the end of the session, they will come through these people and give me messages. And it's happened so much now that to me it's just like talking to an old friend on the telephone. And I always pay attention to what they tell me, because they do take care of me, and they've changed my diet. They've They've told me that if I'm not supposed to go somewhere, I won't even be allowed to step out the front door. So at that kind of protection, I'm not going to argue with it. But one time they told me, before I even ever traveled out of the States, that they said, you will go to London. They said, and when this happens, you'll be traveling all over the world. And they said, every country you go to, it's very important that your energy be there. And they said, doesn't mean any energy will be taken from you, but it's important for your energy to be in these places to interact with whatever is going on there. Everywhere you go, anybody, everywhere you go, they say you leave a piece of your energy there. It doesn't take anything away from you, but it adds to whatever is happening there. The energy is needed in that place. And anytime you think about that place again, you instantly return there. Not physically, but you do return there because your energy draws you back there. So they told me anytime I'm supposed to go somewhere, it's because my energy is needed in that place. And I think any of the rest of you who are what you call light workers or energy workers will understand what I'm talking about. So I thought maybe one of the reasons I was supposed to go over there was that so my energy could be present in that part of the world. Who knows? I hope it'll be for good anyway. It would be used in a positive way. But as close as I want to get to the war, just by flying over it, it was just a strange feeling to be in that proximity. And Dubai is a most amazing place. I didn't know anything about it before, just looking it up on the internet. And now I have found it's the richest country in the world. It's totally amazing. Here's a place. It's a huge city. They call the whole country Dubai, but the city is Dubai also. Here's a whole country, a whole city, that in the 1970s was just a desert community. There was nothing there but just nomads and people living. They said they never had any manufacturing. It was all trading that came in on ships. And in those days, there was a lot of pearl diving that was done off the coast in the Persian Gulf. But it was just people living there in that area. Small houses, and was a desert community. Now it's one of the fastest growing areas in the world. I've never seen anything like it. Blocks and blocks and blocks of skyscrapers are being built. They're all stages of development. And it all began toward the end of the 1970s. There's more construction going on there in one place than anywhere else in the world. It is just tremendous. I've never seen anything like that. They said what happened was they have a sheik who ran the whole country, goes back generations and generations and generations. And those people made lots of money off of oil. And it was like if you had all the money in the world, that would be the equivalent of what these people have. Well, they said the old sheik, there was a big difference between the very rich ruling families and then the ordinary people. There was a wide difference because they were poor and didn't have anything. Well, after the old sheik died, the family, his children, decided to change all of that. I'm hoping I'm getting this story correct. I may not be because I was just going by what I was told over there. So don't get upset if I don't have all the facts straight. But his children, when they are the ones who took over the whole area, decided to do something different. They wanted to use the family money in a constructive way. And that's when they began to build this tremendous place. And if you can imagine, if you had all the money in the world, what you could do with it. They have built whole downtown area. Everything is brand new. Huge skyscrapers. They're building bridges. They're building overpasses. They're building big highways. One man even built a man-made island just off of the outside in the harbor, a man-made island, and he put the largest hotel in the world is on that man-made island. Now they're building a bridge out to it so tourists can go out there. There was one huge dome. Inside that dome, you can go skiing, and they have man-made snow. And my friend that was with me, he said, well, I sure wouldn't think you'd want to come all the way to the desert just so you could go skiing. But it's like everything is possible they have done. They are building Dubai Land, which is going to be like Disneyland. And there's signs everywhere in the city, and they call it Dubai, the city of gold. And by gold, I mean real gold. There was one sign I saw at the side of the road. It said, Dubai, the city of gold. And it said, the language everyone understands, gold. And they said, it is the cheapest place in the world to buy gold. And the people I was with took me down into the gold centers where they have all the stores. And if you can imagine blocks of jewelry stores that the windows are covered with gold necklaces, gold bracelets, rings, everything you could possibly imagine of gold and gold statues. It just, the windows are packed with this, store after store after store. And they said, the gold is the cheapest in the world. And they bargain. I was surprised. We went into one, and you think going into a jewelry store, they wouldn't bargain, but they do. But the money there in that place is tremendous. It's all riches. It's all money. And I also saw that some of the large companies all over from the United States and different all over the world are building headquarters down there, too. Some of these big skyscrapers are being built by these companies. But one thing impressed me was, like, this shows what you could do if you had a tremendous amount of money and used it constructively and positively, because they were building these places, and now the poor people have jobs. Even if it's only in the construction, at least they have work, they have jobs. And we went by one place that was just open desert. And the lady that brought me over said, by next year, this will all be housing. That's how fast everything is growing. If what used to be desert is now part of the city. And she said when she drives the town to work into the downtown area, she'll suddenly say, where did that building come from? That's how fast they're sprouting all over the place. But it was, to me, it was like a contrast, a parallel. Here was a country where the leaders have chosen to put their money into a positive direction to improve the country, to make it the richest place in the world. And right next to it is a country that's being destroyed by war, by bombs. By country is pouring tons and tons of money into a place to destroy it and to use the money in a negative way. You may not agree with me on these things, but I was told I could say anything I want on this show. I saw two very strong contrasts between these two countries, what the positive can do and what the negative can do. Other people have said, well, I haven't seen all of the Middle East. There are some places over there that are pretty bad. That is probably true. But what I saw was beautiful and wonderful. Everywhere was money. Where I gave my talks was a country club out in the desert, and they had a big courtyard that I did the talks on and the workshops, and I gave my class out there. And the part we were in was a polo, an equestrian club. And they were having polo matches on the other side of the club with these beautiful Arabian horses. and everything was wealth, but it was all shared wealth. And they had the nationals, who were the ones who were the natives there, that, you know, dressed in the normal, they don't all dress like that in the Irreverals, but then they have the Westerners. But when I talked about the radio show, I told them I had my own radio show now, and then I thought about it. I said, you guys can get this show, because all you have to do is put on the internet, and they're able to do that. So I'm hoping they're listening, too, because when I left, they said, please, when you get back on your radio show, tell the people you have just visited the most peaceful country in the world. And that's exactly right. It was peaceful. There was no violence, no wars. The people there leave their cars unlocked. One my friend said she could leave her purse on the front seat of her car. She wouldn't have to worry about anything. It's a peaceful country, and it's a peaceful rulers. My friend that was with me, he wanted to go out and ride the camels, so he went on an overnight trip where he was able to sleep under the stars in the desert and see the camels and go for camel rides. But like I said, I may not have the full story. Some people are saying I probably don't. But everywhere I go, I seem to find the positive. I seem to find the good in people. This is what I would rather focus on. I don't see the point in tearing up a country, trying to change people's beliefs and trying to change their government. These people can do it on their own. But there again, we could get into some arguments, and I don't really want to do that. I just want to tell you about a place that was beautiful, peaceful, thriving, and what can really happen if people set their mind to it. Now, Mercy asked me to come back, but I said it's going to depend on what else I can put in on the next trips, because that is a long way to go. But in March, I'll be speaking at an international hypnosis conference in India, in New Delhi. And then they want me to come back to India and teach my methods in three cities, in Mumbai, New Delhi, and Bangalore. So I'll probably be going back to that area, so I may return again to Dubai. But it seems like my work is taking me more out of the country now than it used to. Before I was doing conferences, some of them, I was at the height of this, before I started slowing down, I was doing a conference every week in the United States, sometimes three in a week, that I would just go from place to place, do these conferences, before even coming home. And sometimes I would only have one day home before I had to set out for Australia or Europe. And that just got to be too much, so I finally had to cut it back to where now I'm only trying to do no more than two conferences in a month in the States. But when you go overseas, you have to plan it out differently to make use of your time over there. But I'm still traveling everywhere. The books are being translated into more and more languages, and as they reach the different countries, I have to go there to lecture with translators. I said in the beginning, it was very strange, as I first began to write my books. They were my children. That's what I felt like with them. A lot of you don't know, it took me 9 years to find my first publisher. By that time, I had five books written. So I said, it's just like incubating, like having a child. Only instead of 9 months, it took 9 years. And by the time it was born, I said I had a litter, because I had five books in print, you know, that were ready to go to print at that time. And then in the other shows I've done, I've told you about my background and how I formed my own company. But now it's as though you release a child into the world, you know, just like you do in your family. You release that child out into the world, and it makes its own way. That's the way I feel about my books. They have taken on a life of their own. They are out there creating and replicating and duplicating and reaching people all over the world, something I would never have thought would be possible. But they have really taken on a life of their own and are going everywhere and touching many, many people. I get emails and letters and calls from all over the world saying how the books have changed their lives. So this is something that is totally unexpected. You couldn't plan something like this. You know, somebody in a higher power had to be in charge of it to make it happen, to get all of this going and spreading it everywhere. But I'm not sure what I wanted to talk about today. I guess I just wanted to talk about some of these travels, because I know when the other shows, I'm going to be focusing on the content of most of the books. And then I'll be having guests, too, at a later date. But some people have asked me if I know about my own past lives. And I do. I've had another woman friend of mine in the early days help me to find out about some of my own past lives and the connections. I don't need to do it anymore because I've found out why I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. I found out the connections with my family, so I don't feel the need to do it anymore. But there was an interesting thing that happened that was directly connected with one of my past lives. This happened when I went to Bulgaria. And this is about, oh, I guess 5 years ago when I was asked to go to Bulgaria. This was right after Bulgaria had separated from the communists. And it was in a terrible state, very poor. All the infrastructure had been destroyed. And, of course, the communists said, if you come back into the fold, so to speak, we will repair all the damages and fix the city, and you'll be a lot better off. But they decided they wanted to keep their freedom. But there is a very poor country. Now, this is about 5 years ago. Maybe it's different now, but that was what I found at that time. And this man contacted me. His name was Drago. And Drago wanted me to come there, and he made arrangements to get my books translated into Bulgarian. And this was right at the time that the war was breaking out in Yugoslavia and Kosovo and all those countries. And I'm looking on the map again, trying to see where I'm supposed to go. And my son said, Mom, you're not going to go over there. Look where they want you to go. Sofia is the capital where I was going, was just over the border from the fighting in Yugoslavia. I just thought about that. Isn't it an interesting comparison than what I just did? But he said, you don't want to do it. It'll be dangerous. But I've always felt if someone asks me to come somewhere, there has to be a reason. And I feel I need to do it. I need to go. To me, it's an honor to be asked to go anywhere. And as I said, they have told me if I'm not supposed to go, I won't even be allowed to go out the front door. They said something will happen, and at the time you will think it's something bad, but it just meant that you weren't supposed to go. That Bulgarian trip turned out to be one of the most remarkable trips I've ever done. This shows you if you're afraid, if you let fear get in the way, you'll never do anything. Fear will hold you back. If there's something you're supposed to do, do it. Go ahead and do it. Enjoy life. Because you sit around waiting, feel safe, whatever is safe. You could get killed in your front room. You've heard of cars crashing through the window of some people's front room, and then what? People are too afraid to do anything, to follow their dream, to follow their mission, and nothing ever happens. And nothing happens to them as they stay home. So anyway, I have gone on these trips, even being warned by my family, you shouldn't do it. But when I got to Bulgaria, it was one of the most fantastic receptions I've ever had. I got off that plane, and it was like a rock star getting off that plane. The entire airport was crowded with reporters and people, and Drago met me there, and he just said, I have to warn you, he said, everybody's here. and here was all these people, and it was just an avalanche, everybody taking pictures, wanting interviews, and talking to me. One of the first ones shoved a microphone in my face and said, "Well, what do you think of Bulgaria?" And I said, "Well, I just got here. I don't know anything about it yet." But they had set up press conferences that looked like the president's press conference, everybody wanting to know about my books and about my information. And then I had a meeting with all of these doctors and scientists. The whole room was full of them, and for 2 hours I answered questions. They had never heard of using hypnosis as past life therapy and the way I use it. They had never heard of doing that. It was totally new to them. And it was just, they told me one time, what you are speaking about, and I gave some lectures there, is against the law in this country, because we're only allowed to talk about what we are taught at the university. And this kind of material, metaphysics and hypnosis, past lives, reincarnation, is not taught in the universities. And it's not taught of how you can use hypnosis in this way. So they said, really what you're doing is against the law. And I said, well, will I get in trouble? They said, no, because you're a foreigner. But anyway, for 2 hours, these doctors and scientists questioned me. They had never heard of doing this, of getting therapy by going into past lives. It was totally new to them. And before I left that country, they gave me the highest award that can be given. And this association that brought me over was called the Association of Phenomena. And they give this award to someone in metaphysics every year in that country. And it had been like an underground type of society until they broke away from the communists, and now they were getting more open about it. But they really surprised me. Before I left, they gave me this, it was a statuette. It looks like it's made out of very heavy brass, and it is more or less like in the shape of a stylized flame, the way it twists. And they said, I was the first American and the first foreigner outside of Bulgaria to ever receive this award. And it was given for the highest advancement in the research of psychic phenomena. And it still, to me, is just mind-blowing that they thought enough of what I was doing to give that award to me. And it was on TV over there. But the important thing was what happened as a result of my trip there. Now, while we were there, the Russian people were doing a documentary on my travels over there. Well, to go back to what I said before about past lives, in one of my past lives that I remembered, I was at the Library of Alexandria when it was burned. Many of you probably know the story of Alexandria and how all the books were destroyed in Alexandria. Well, in one of my past lives, I was there, and I was one of the keepers of the records. I couldn't read, but I kept the records, and I gave them to the scholars that could read. And I loved the knowledge, and the books were very precious to me, and I was there whenever the library was destroyed. And it was a horrible experience to see the books burn and to have knowledge be wiped away. So I was running out of the library in the past life as this man trying to carry as many scrolls as I could, and then I was run over by a chariot in the street and killed that way. And when I told this story at some of the panels, past life panels, they all said, "Well, are you determined to rebuild, to rewrite the whole entire Alexandrian library because I've written so many books?" Maybe that's what it is, because to me, knowledge is so important. I hate to see a book messed up or disfigured or, dog-eared or written in. Many people do make notes in them, but to me, books are so important and so precious. maybe it's what I am trying to do is rewrite the library, because my work does deal with lost knowledge and lost information. Anyway, they were going to do this documentary in a hotel in Sofia. Drago came to our hotel and he said, you know, take me there. And he said, the woman who was making the documentary had a suggestion. She wanted me to do a past life regression for the documentary on film as a demonstration. And I said, well, I suppose it could be done. I just you don't like surprises, because you never have any idea what's going to come out whenever you do a past life regression. It could have been very boring, and it would have been a waste of their tape, but because this was so new to them, I guess they figured anything would be interesting. So Drago said he had a suggestion. He said, why didn't I do the sample session with him? Because he knew me, and we were, you know, he could speak English very well, and it would be much easier. He'd be at ease, too. So I said, all right, but I said, they may think we have cooked up something in the meantime. But I thought, you know, I would be willing to try it with him. So we get to the hotel with all the cameras are all set up, and they're getting ready to go, and they have this beautiful young blonde girl with shorts. She came out, and the Russian woman said, this is the one we want you to do the session with. Of course, it would have made good camera, you know, this beautiful young girl looking like a model with shorts. But I said, yes, but I have to have someone who can understand English. And she said, me speak English. But I didn't feel good about it. I felt it was just more for show than anything else. So I told her we had already decided that we were going to do the demonstration, the sample session with Drago. So she didn't like the idea much, but she agreed to it. So he lays down on the bed, and I do the session. That's where the big surprise came in. He went back to a life in Alexandria at the burning of the library. He was one of the scholars that would come into the library to read the books. And he was involved in numerology and astrology, a very wise man. And he was there whenever the destruction of the library also happened. And I'm sitting there thinking, oh my gosh, he is describing everything that I remembered from my own session. The description of the place, the description of everything in it, and all of it was just like we had been there at the same time, because everything was familiar. And it was blowing me away. I'm trying to ask questions and stay calm. And in his regression, he is trying to run out of the library also, carrying books, trying to save what books he could. And as he ran out, the building was collapsing, and a huge rafter fell on him, and it landed across his shoulders and pinned him to the floor and killed him. He told me later it was very emotional, the whole session, but because he knew there were cameras going and people watching, he couldn't get as emotional as he would have. But at least he was able to tell the story. Well, afterwards, when we were talking, we were going back to the hotel, I said, boy, do I have a story to tell you, because he didn't realize we'd both been there at the same time. But he told me the next morning, whenever he came to pick me up, he said, I'm almost afraid to say this, but he said, for many, many years, that he'd had pains all across the shoulder area of his back, and nothing he did could help that or help take it away. And after the session, he said it was gone. And he said, I'm almost afraid to say it, because is it really gone, or am I just imagining this? But after that, he didn't have any more trouble with it. But then I started telling him, Bob, that I was there too. I said, this is amazing. Now, for me, it seems that my mission is to get the knowledge back. But he is doing the same thing because he was bringing people with knowledge into his country, bringing people from other countries in and arranging to have their books published there. He's also replacing and regaining the knowledge without realizing it. Oh, maybe that was the mission. But whenever we went to the plane and left, you know, I just told him, well, it's nice to meet you again 800 years later and halfway around the world. So how in the world could these things happen? But the next year, I also got a call from him saying that they had aired the documentary with the demonstration tape, and there was such an interest. They kept playing it again and again. People kept calling in, wanting to know more about reincarnation, wanting to know about hypnosis, about past life regression. And the interest was so strong that now those same doctors that I was having the discussion with, and they were arguing with me about this, now they are teaching past life regression in that country. So I said, maybe I was responsible for bringing a whole new way of thinking into a country. I don't know. But here again, if I had been afraid to go, people were warning me not to go. If I'd been afraid to go, none of this would have happened. You never know the part you have to play, the little part, your little cog in a machine. Just by being in some certain place at a certain time, by doing or saying one little thing, you never know the effect it will have on those around you. You never know what. Sometimes you never know. I would never have known. A lot of the things that have happened, I don't know how it's affected people until they write me. So by being afraid and not willing to take a chance and go to these unusual places, my life would have been totally different. The knowledge would not have gone out. It wouldn't have touched so many people. So it's really amazing when I look back on it, people trying to keep me from going to these places, and look at what happened in these places. In May, it was my first trip to Moscow, and I've always wanted to see the Red Square. I got to see that because our publisher had a driver that took us everywhere we wanted to go. He had a translator who was also like a guide, and he took us all over the city, pointing out everything and telling us all about it. They treated me like royalty. I didn't spend a cent the whole time I was in Kiev, the Ukraine, and also in Moscow, because my Russian publisher has his headquarters in Kiev and the branch is in Moscow. And they treated me with like royalty. But when I got to Moscow, I kept thinking of all the stories we've heard down through the years about how poor they are over there, how they can't afford the things we have in America. They didn't have refrigerators. They don't have washing machines. You go into the stores, there's no food in the stores. There's no goods to be bought in the stores. This is what we've been told for so many years. This is what I was expecting to find, a gray, dark place of unhappy people where there wasn't anything. We didn't have the benefits we have in this part of the world because that is what we've been told. That they were jealous of us because we had all of these wonderful things and they had nothing. So, imagine my surprise when I find none of that is true. Now, maybe it might have been true 5, 10 years ago, but it definitely is not true now. I found a thriving, alive city. Kiev was the same way. There's construction going on everywhere because the people in Kiev and also in Moscow, the majority of the people live in huge apartment houses. They don't have private homes. And so they're building more and more of these to for the population. Of course, they said the rent now in some of these newer ones are going to be hard for some of them to afford. But I found Moscow. First thing I noticed, I've always heard about how they didn't have cars, it was hard to get cars, and that I heard they had to take the windshield wipers off their cars and things like that. Everything was hard to get. As I said, maybe that's what it was 5-10 years ago, but that's not what I found. When we first hit Moscow, the traffic jams everywhere, new cars, people driving everywhere, huge billboards, just, you know, advertising all of the modern products we have here in the States. I didn't see anybody that needed things or wanted things, not like we had been told. And I went into one mall that was just like the malls here in the United States. Same brands, the same stores. You would have thought you'd been transplanted from the United States, except for the letters on the signs. It was just like being back here. And the hotel I stayed in Moscow was called the Cosmos Hotel. It's one of the biggest in the world. It was pure luxury. As I said, I didn't have to pay for anything the whole time I was there. I gave lectures, and they are now going to print some more of my books are being translated into Russian. So when I go back in March, I'll be speaking there again. This time they're going to do a full-fledged publicity campaign, and I'll probably be speaking other places in those countries. And I believe I said before that while I was there, I had a surprise summons, I guess you would say, on the last day I was there. This woman came in and she said, "You've got to take this call. This is a very important man here in Moscow, and he wants to meet with you. And he's a doctor. He has an organization over there." So I said the only time I could meet with him was after I'd finished my lectures, and they was going to send a car around to bring me over to his center. And when I got there, he began telling me about this very ambitious plan they have. He is very much involved in alternative healing and natural medicine, and there was a psychiatrist in the office also, and they are both pushing with this plan. And their center is, I believe it's called the Russian Center with Folk Medicine. But they are trying to organize healers and alternative medicine, people involved in any kind of herbal or anything dealing with natural medicine. They're trying to organize these all over the world. He said it's like Doctors Without Borders, but they're calling it Healers Without Borders. And they want to find as many as they can and organize them all over the world to help the people of the world and to get back to the natural medicine, the alternative, the energy workers, the healers, the anything. And he wanted me to help in the United States. And I don't have all the instructions yet. When I go back, I'll probably get more. But he said he wanted me to help organize the healers over here so they could be a part of this organization. And in my work as a therapist, I have many clients that come to me who are energy workers. They are naturopaths, homeopaths, Reiki workers, healers, crystal healers, of herbal, of every kind you can think of, I've come across. And when I've mentioned this organization, they've told me they want to be a part of this. It's as though it's an underground, an undercurrent that is happening all over the world. People think we're in the minority, but we're really not. It's just not come to the surface yet. Just underneath the surface. And it's getting ready to come up to where people will see how big this really is with the natural healing, the alternative. The doctor told me, he said, the statistics of the year 2000 in the United States showed that 45% of the people in the United States believed and practiced alternative healing and went to alternative practitioners and like naturopaths, homeopaths, etc. And I said, 45%? I said, they don't tell us that in the States. They don't tell us there's that many people here who are really into this. Well, he said, those were the 2000 statistics. That's what they said. So there's a whole lot more to this, and there's a lot more going on with the metaphysics and the beliefs that I think we're going to see a big resurgence in this. And Don said, with the response to these radio shows, I think we're also seeing there's a lot more people interested out there. I hope a lot of you have gotten to see the movie What the Bleep, because that movie has really turned things around. You know, it took America by storm, and it has changing people's belief systems. It's getting them to ask questions, making them think. And when I was in Dubai, after I gave my class, I was teaching my method over there. I teach it all over the world, my unique method of hypnosis. And we were, after the talks, my class, we went to this person's house to have something to eat, and they said they were going to show What the Bleep. And so the people there got to see it for the first time. So that movie is also going all over the world. So I see it happening, and I think it's very important that we are a part of something. This is a wonderful time to be alive right now, as we're a part of all of these things that are happening right now. This is very wonderful. And I didn't know I was going to do this entire show on the trips, but I've been so many places. But next week, I'm going to start with the information in some of my books. I'll figure out one of the books to talk about, and I hope that you'll be interested and you can call in and ask questions. But I want to give out my 800 number and my website so that people can check in if they want to know more about my books. You're already connected with Blog and Service, and they have a direct link over to my website. But my website is Ozark Mountain Publishing is the name of my company, and I've abbreviated that on my website. It's OZARKMT.com. Or for those overseas, it's called OZARTMT. I mean, it's OZARKMT.com. Ozark Mountain. That is the name of my website. My 800 number here, if you want to call and talk about the books or anything, is 1-800-935-0045. 1-800-935-0045. Contact the website or the phone number if you're interested in private sessions, which I do in my office here in Arkansas, or if you're interested in my lectures or workshops, or if you're interested in attending any of my hypnosis classes. Any of these things, you can contact the website or the 800 number and get information about them. Right, and I appreciate you listening tonight then. Good night.